Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
It's Media Network, the Radio Netherlands communications magazine. Some people like it, some don't. Some people like Jonathan Marks, most don't.
Thank you very much. I think there's a mistake in the script there. Anyway, glad you could join us. It's cold and crisp outside, which is why we're taking you on a free trip to the Pacific for part of the programme. We start in Australia, and if you're an earshot of the domestic shortwave service in that country, you may have spotted announcements that have just started going out. The ABC station in Brisbane is now putting out this message from Peter Gooch of the Regional Production Unit.
ABC Radio wants to hear from people in rural and regional Queensland who use this shortwave service. Please tell us which shortwave service, VLQ9, 9660 kHz or VLM4, 4920 kHz, you listen to and at what times. Please write to Tom Rowan, Master Control Radio, Box 9994, GPO Brisbane, Queensland, 4001, or phone Tom Rowan, reverse charges on Brisbane 377-5101 during office hours.
Propagation from the Pacific to Europe has been pretty good in the last few weeks, so I wonder if they're getting any feedback. Mind you, I suppose for Arthur Cushion in Invercargill, New Zealand, it can't be very difficult to hear Australia's domestic service. Arthur?
Yes, they're still operating, Jonathan. The Brisbane service is on two frequencies, 4920 and 9660. And from Perth, it's 6140, 9610 and 15425. They're relays of the internal ABC domestic service. Australia is now on five time zones, three states, Victoria, New South Wales and South Australia have gone forward an hour, and the others, Queensland, Northern Territory, West Australia, remain on their old standard time.
The ABC is the parent organisation of the country's external radio service, Radio Australia. But you may remember our reports earlier this year concerning the projects by the Australian Armed Forces Radio to serve their countrymen serving abroad. Well, since the Australian forces serving with the UN in Cambodia have now been withdrawn, the Australian Armed Forces Radio service beamed in that direction has finished. The Somalia service beamed to troops in Somalia is also about to cease transmission. The ship HMAS Sydney is being withdrawn from the Gulf, and troops serving with the UN are coming home from Somalia. The only long-term deployment of Australian troops is at Butterworth in Malaysia. WAFR is planning to continue its service to those troops. Transmissions come from the transmitter in Canberra with 30 kilowatts using a directional rhombic antenna. The current schedule has 3 one-hour transmissions, starting at 01, 0430 and 0930 UTC. Transmissions at 01 and 0430 currently use the frequency of 13525 kHz, and at 0930 they use 11465 kHz. Those frequencies are subject to real-time monitoring. If they deteriorate, then the transmissions change frequency. They switch to the alternative channels picked from this selection, namely 8115 or 11465, or 13525, or 18735, or finally 19969 kHz. Remember, all these transmissions are in the upper sideband mode. And it looks like the further development of WAFR overseas and domestic networks is still under consideration. Now to a station in the southeastern part of the United States.
This is WRMI, Radio Miami International, with a test transmission on 9,955 kHz in the 31-meter band. Your reception reports will be much appreciated, and they'll be answered with our WRMI QSL card. Send your reports, mentioning the date, time, frequency, and reception quality, to WRMI, P.O. Box 526852, Miami, Florida, 33152, USA. Or you can fax us at area code 305-267-9253.
Announcements with test tones have been heard since the weekend from the news station in Miami, owned by entrepreneur Jeff White. For several years, he's acted as a broker for many organisations who want to broadcast to the Caribbean and Latin America under the general name Radio Miami International. Airtime has been hired, though, from other private shortwave radio stations. WRNO and WHRI are the ones that immediately come to mind. But now WRMI has been noted by several listeners to Media Network around 19 hours UTC. Just before we came on the air, I asked Jeff when he started regular testing of their new facility.
Well, they're not exactly regular yet. They're sort of irregular in that we don't have a definite schedule established, but the engineers are testing out the antenna first, and that's being done with about a 400-450-watt standby auxiliary transmitter, although it's been heard as far away as Venezuela and Colombia and surprisingly all over North America.
You've got the antenna the right way around, have you?
Well, it's going, believe it or not, 160 degrees from Miami, which is south-southeast, right through Cuba, Barranquilla, Colombia, and down to Montevideo, Uruguay. But apparently there's a fair amount of radiation off the back of it as well, and people in the U.S. and Canada are picking it up too. Of course, we sort of expected that. That's with 450 watts, but when we get the 50-kilowatt transmitter hooked up, I imagine the signal will be even better, hopefully both off the front and the back. And that should be, hopefully, less than 4 weeks. They're still doing final refurbishing work on the Wilkinson 50-kilowatt transmitter, going through it piece by piece and wire by wire and repairing and replacing everything. I think within the next few weeks, the 50 kilowatts will be on as well.
And you're keeping the same frequency?
Yes, 9955 kilohertz.
At the same time, Radio Miami International stopped doing something.
Actually, we were supposed to stop on October 30th. A program called Radio Seis de Sam, which is a Haitian Creole program produced by the Jean-Bertrand Aristide government in exile of Haiti. It comes out of the Haitian embassy in Washington. Aristide was due to return to Port-au-Prince on October 30th, and Radio Seis de Sam then was going to disappear, the idea being that then Aristide would have control of the national radio station in Haiti. Unfortunately, none of that happened. So they have had to continue broadcasting on shortwave. In fact, they've increased the hours again. They decided to continue for 2 weeks more until November 15th, and now they have decided to continue indefinitely because there's no scheduled return date for Aristide in the near future. So they're now on 2 hours a day, 2200 UTC via WHRI on 17830, and at 2300 UTC on 7355 via WRNO. That's Monday through Friday for both of those hours.
And those programs go via you?
Yeah, they come from the Haitian Embassy in Washington down here to Miami, and then from Miami out to WRNO and WHRI transmitters.
Radio Miami International has done quite a bit of business over the last few years because exile groups, particularly the Cuban community in Florida, has had a political interest in getting its message into the Caribbean or South America. But what are the prospects further ahead? Latin American media seems to be blossoming with enormous pressure from Spanish-language satellite television. Recently, we've seen the Voice of America cut back its shortwave service in Spanish, and Transworld Radio in Bonaire ceased broadcasting on shortwave altogether to that particular region. So why is Jeff White investing in shortwave wireless?
Jonathan, I've done some investigating in various Latin American countries over the past couple of years for a number of shortwave stations, including Radio Netherlands. My conclusion really is that I think it's a little too early to switch off shortwave and go totally satellite. I don't think there's much audience at all for direct satellite broadcasts, and the problems that are inherent in rebroadcasting really are significant. You have no control over what's being used,
and they want a totally different kind of programming than what shortwave stations are putting out on the air now.
Could you argue, though, that it's a more interesting style of programming, a more up-tempo, short to the point?
I would argue that it is more up-tempo, short and to the point, but not necessarily more interesting. Basically, what's happening is that international broadcasters like BBC, VOA, Radio Netherlands, et cetera, are now trying to be rebroadcast using their satellite signals, rebroadcast by commercial radio networks and local commercial radio stations in Latin America. Now, so obviously they have to adapt a more up-tempo style of programming, shorter programs. Basically what they want is a news feed service. And until now, none of these stations have offered the stations in Latin America what they want. As far as I'm concerned, that's rebroadcasting. And I still think there's a large audience out there of shortwave listeners in Latin America, of opinion leaders.
Radio Netherlands, the home of high frequency since 1927.
Adrian Sainsbury, frequency manager of Radio New Zealand International, has just informed me of a couple of frequency changes due to co-channel interference from Russia. From Monday to Friday, they're now using 9655 kHz from 1650 to 1849, and daily 11735 kHz is scheduled from 1850 to 2137. Mind you, they put a decent signal into Hilversum around 10 hours UTC, bearing in mind their primary target is the Pacific. Here's what 9700 kHz sounded like yesterday morning.
Radio New Zealand International, Pacific Regional News with Earl Martel. First, the main point. The Fiji government has banned marches by both pro and anti-rumble factions in Suva.
Listening to Radio New Zealand International for any length of time, you'll discover there's more to the output than just the English language. We've had some questions from listeners in South Asia and West Africa who've bumped into these programmes and wondered what they are. Henry Te Ua is manager of Radio New Zealand's Maori and Pacific Islands programme unit, and he explained to me what they do.
New Zealand, of course, was settled originally by the Maori people, so the Maori language is one of the two official languages in New Zealand, the other one being English. But also from the late 1950s onwards, there was a great wave of immigrants coming from the neighbouring Pacific Islands areas. So we have people from the Cook Islands groups. They speak their own brand of Maori, Cook Islands Maori, from Niue. They have their own Niuean language. The Samoas, Western and American. So we have a mix of languages from that area, from the Kingdom of Tonga, from Tokelau, and also from Fiji. So Radio New Zealand recognises the indigenous peoples of the neighbouring islands, and as a consequence, my unit specialises in broadcasting programmes in seven different vernacular languages, plus English, making a total of eight.
But if you listen, for example, to Radio Kiribati, which has that shortwave link, can you understand it?
I can pick up snippets of understanding. I can't say, profess that I can understand the languages fluently, but there are a lot of common denominators. I mean, the original ethnic stock, as it were, the indigenous stock, came from one particular source. Now, I'm speaking in terms of thousands of years ago. But the derivatives of that original language still exist right through today. So whilst the Tongan language might be different from, say, Tokelauan different from Samoan, if you look carefully, and if you listen carefully, you will recognise these similar elements. Cook Island Maori and New Zealand Maori, for instance, is very, very similar. There are dialectal differences. There are slight differences in pronouncing the vowel sounds, like the L sound and the R sound. But when you say uh and r, there is that close similarity. So a trained ear can, in fact, pick the differences in the different languages. And as I say, because I worked among the language groups for so long, I can recognise a lot of those similar sounds.
I've had some questions, too, from people saying, what on earth is Pidgin English? It sounds very strange.
Pidgin English is more a phenomena of Melanesia. If you think of the Great Pacific region being split up into three areas, Polynesia, Micronesia, and Melanesia, and the ethnic origins are quite different. As I said before, the Polynesian stock come from a single source many, many eons ago, similarly with Micronesia and Melanesia. So within Melanesia, because there is such a great diversity of dialects, literally hundreds in a place like Vanuatu, for instance, to come to some sort of common denominator, they form their own mix of English and their own language, and it's a language which is really understood by the total population. It does sound rather strange when you first hear it, but I would say that it serves its purpose because the most important thing is that people have got to communicate between each other. And if they've got to use that artificial language to do so, then all power to it.
Now, what does Radio New Zealand do domestically then in the languages other than English?
Radio New Zealand, it does have this unit that which I manage, and we have the Pacific languages. The other languages are really catered for by what we call the community access stations, which broadcast programs in the Dutch language, Vietnamese, Chinese. So it's a matter of complementarity. Radio New Zealand looks after the Pacific and the English interests, and the other access stations and community stations look after the languages of the more recent immigrants. But my unit has got a second string to its bow, as it were. Whilst we broadcast domestically, that's within New Zealand, our programs are also carried by the shortwave service of Radio New Zealand. Its prime coverage area is the whole of the Pacific Basin. But the signal also spills into the west coast of the USA and right up to Canada.
Now, but you provide actually a new service to, for example, Fiji, and in fact listening to extracts of tapes of Radio Tonga, it's quite obvious that they're using you as a news source.
Very, very true. And I think that's one of the benefits which accrues from our programming, because some of the more remoter areas do not have that instant access to the different international news sources. Although I will say that at the moment there is an organisation called PAC News, which disseminates Pacific-oriented news around the Pacific area to 22 different countries. But the marvellous thing with people is, whilst they're interested in the great international events, they're also very, very vitally interested in the smaller happenings within their own communities. What are their local churches doing? Who has died? What visiting groups are going from this island to that island? So part of our news bulletins, we deliberately carry those softer type of news items. So when we broadcast overseas, my producers use all the items which have been gathered in New Zealand, and that then is beamed out to the appropriate islands. When we broadcast it domestically, we use the material which we've collected from overseas. So in a way, we are like both ends of a bridge. And I do know that many of the Pacific Islands broadcasters tune into the international service, record our bulletins, and those bulletins become a main source of their news output from their own frequencies on that particular day.
This is Radio Fiji 3, and the time is 9 o'clock.
Radio Fiji News.
This is the Fiji News, read to you by Edward Lalambalava.
So what about the situation out there in the Pacific Basin? Fiji is a very interesting example.
Regarding Fiji, we have a Fijian producer, and she presents news and also music. And I will say that in the late 1980s, when the military coup occurred in Fiji, my unit was the first media organisation to receive news that Major General Sitiveni Rambuka had in fact toppled the Bavandra government and had set himself up in power. For a period of about 24 hours, we were being besieged by media people from all over the world saying, can we have part of this interview which you did over the telephone with your correspondent and so on. The whole Fijian situation is resolved now because over the last 5 to 6 years, Major General, or he's now Brigadier, Sitiveni Rambuka, is the fully-fledged Prime Minister of Fiji. He's a Fijian, and just quickly going over some of the events leading up to that coup, I see it as being a tremendous demonstration of indigenous people seeking their self-identity and recapturing their own ethnic power. Putting Fiji into perspective, the indigenous Fijian people, of course, were the original inhabitants. But earlier this century, there were different interests who saw the capability of Fiji's production, particularly in sugarcane. So to boost up the production of the cane, indentured labourers from India were brought into Fiji to act as the people who actually went out of the cane fields and so on.
That was the British that did that, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was the British. So over the years, the Indian population outstripped the Fijian population. And this was reflected in the parliamentary setup. So when Major General Sitiveni Rambuka was heading the military, and Ratu Sekamse Simara, who's one of the great politicians and leaders of the Pacific area, we could see that there was starting to be an imbalance between the indigenous peoples and the peoples who had come in later on. So we still interpret, although I haven't been able to find out the exact details, so this is conjecture, opinion on my part, that conjecture is that this power to win back one's own right, one's own standing within one's own country, was really the great triggering force for that coup and also for the subsequent coup. So I believe that now, politically, there is a... It has been enacted in Fiji that the indigenous Fijians will always have the majority number of seats within their own parliament.
They are quite sensitive in Fiji as to how news is reported from the island. Marcel Rommets lives in Arnhem in the east of the Netherlands and is an active media enthusiast. He's just back from an extensive tour of the Pacific, during which he naturally took a cassette recorder to make some off-the-air recordings. But in Fiji, he ran into problems.
Yes, I had a problem getting my tape recorder into the country because on my landing card I had to mark if I was a journalist or not, because a journalist, they need to have permission from the government on beforehand because they are not allowed to get into the country. But I took a tape recorder with me and I had a discussion of about 5 minutes at the customs entrance about what I wanted to do with my tape recorder. And of course I didn't tell that I wanted to make nice recordings in Fiji. I just said I have some tapes with me and I want to play them.
Marcel discovered two types of broadcasting on the island, government and commercial. The Fiji Broadcasting Commission runs several networks, two of them national.
Yeah, I think it's an old British colony, and I think the British, they have made the radio system there. And when you look to the building of Radio Fiji, it's called Broadcasting House, which is similar to the BBC building in London. And I think that still a lot of equipment in that building also remains from the BBC time.
The government station operating on 104 megahertz FM carries quite a lot of commercials, though, too.
Yes, the station 104 FM was started not so long ago as a reaction to a private enterprise, FM 96. And it was the real first commercial radio station in Fiji, and FM 96 attracted a lot of advertisements, and Radio Fiji got an order from the government to start a station like FM 96. And now when you listen to FM 104 at this moment, I think they have only 20% of the advertisements that FM 96 has.
All day, every day. From the 60s to the 90s. FM 104.
You're on the new 104 FM with Gene Kotamalavu, and of course Lights Out is where it's at.
Keep Fiji clean.
A clean Fiji is a healthy Fiji, because clean and healthy is best. So do the right thing. Throw your litter in a bin. The anti-litter laws must be followed.
Further down the dial is the commercial competition.
FM 96, and if I ever fall in love, that's shy.
Hey, why are you looking so pleased with yourself?
I've just made a wise decision, brother.
What was that?
Well, my wife and I have been talking about family planning.
Since when are you worried about family planning?
Since I started to worry about how I'm going to afford to feed the two children I have and give them clothes and send them to school.
So what are you doing about it?
We both decided I'd use Protector condoms.
Use what?
Protector condoms. One of the best ways to help you plan your family. Get your Protector condoms for only 66 cents for free in shops and chemists throughout Fiji. Be wise. Always wear Protector condoms.
Cockroaches?
Yeah!
Rats and mice?
Ah! Ants? Ooh! Carpet beetles?
Interesting collection of messages there.
There's a lot of Radio Australia news relayed on Radio Fiji, but I think they tape the broadcasts and listen to them on beforehand. They don't relay them off air.
Although in the following extract, I hear they do use the Radio Australia time signal.
104 FM.
This is Radio Australia. 9 hours, Universal.
This is Radio Fiji 3, and the time is 9 o'clock.
It's handy being exactly 12 hours ahead of Greenwich Mean Time, or UTC. But what about television?
For quite a few years now, they are trying to start a television station in Fiji. the government, until this moment, hasn't decided how much influence it wants to have on the TV station. But when you look to the TV station, you can see that there's something strange. They have a lot of advertisements, so it's kind of a commercial venture. But the television news, the daily news broadcast, is brought to the television station by the government video center. So it's official news.
And what is it, local news, or do they take news from stations like the Australian Television International or the BBC World Service?
The local news is produced locally, but besides that, they have live rebroadcast of BBC World News.
And that's a lot for now. More media news and features in 7 days. From the team, have a pleasant weekend.
Copyright 1993.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static. Some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.